Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
It is a creature, which is presumed by the followers of cryptozoology pseudoscientific subculture to exist on the basis of anecdotal and other evidence considered insufficient by mainstream science. While biologists regularly identify new species following established scientific methodology, cryptozoologists focus on entities mentioned in folklore, record, and rumor. So we're talking about cryptids.
Right.
And that came up because of the new Free League Kickstarter.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Very similar to Tales from the Loop, Free League is doing a new RPG that is based on the work of Johann Egerkrantz. And he did a book of illustrations and writings called Vaesan. And Vaesan is, they call it, you know, Nordic horror or Nordic creatures and mythology.
Okay.
And so he did, you know, basic illustrations of the creatures and then descriptions. And similar to the world building and illustrations that Simon Stollenhag had done for Tales from the Loop, Niels Hintz is doing the writing of the RPG. And basically the RPG, you play investigators that belong to this group. The thing that separates you from other people is that you can actually see these creatures. So kind of like the boy in Sixth Sense, like you see these things that are invisible to ordinary people. So your job is to investigate and probably fight them because I see people holding guns and things.
Yeah, I saw that too, yeah.
But so it seems to be like set like, you know, early 20th century, like more, you know, Lovecraft era, but based on kind of cryptids and mythology of Scandinavia.
Yeah, that's what I picked up too.
And it's the Year Zero engine. It'll be another kind of permutation of that, and it'll be interesting to see what they want to do with that to kind of fit it to that setting. It looks a little lighter. The artwork is a little more playful. It's a little more cartoony.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And not so dark.
I'm kind of wondering how they're going to do the horror, because I think they did it really well in the Alien RPG.
Mm-hmm.
And Alien RPG is the Year Zero game that I've looked at the most, but I've been pretty impressed with how Free League adapted it to the setting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they will do the same thing. I'm curious how much horror would come through in this new game, which is the part that interests me the most.
Yes. Yeah. And if you're already like a special person that can see these things and deal with them, maybe you don't have a fear, you know, you're kind of like, you know, curious, you have some scientific curiosity or something about them, going to make you a little bit different. You're more investigator than just victim and you're kind of powerless.
Haven't looked at it, but I wonder if they're going to do sort of like a sanity mechanic, because it does feel kind of like Lovecraft, you know, Call of Cthulhu-ish, which
right.
I think at least some games are moving away from,
mm-hmm.
because any depiction of insanity in games is, you have the real potential to be insensitive.
Right.
Like Evil Hat's Fate of Cthulhu, which I think I got the rewards for back mm-hmm. in the States. They went with like a corruption mechanic for the kind of the body deterioration, essentially, of the kind of Terminator back through time style investigators rather than insanity, specifically because they didn't want to run the risk of being insensitive.
Right. Yeah, I saw that they made reference to there is something. So like a stress, like the stress mechanic in Alien, they may do something. I didn't see what it was named and didn't see how it was going to function. I think that you kind of need to do something when you're dealing with things
horror,
beyond understanding. Yeah. Horror needs to have some kind of terror or some kind of disabling effect on you. Free League, I have a lot of faith in. They've done a nice job with everything they've produced. And of course, the quality of the books that they publish is really great. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this campaign looks like. It's running right now on Kickstarter. And they're calling it Vaesan is a dark gothic setting steeped in Nordic folklore and old myths of Scandinavia. So the game mechanics are an adapted version of the award-winning Year Zero engine. So that should be some happy D6 dice pool rolling.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on that. And I just want everyone to know that that's up. And it funded pretty fast. So I think people have faith in it, because the same way that they took inspiration from an illustrator and writings of an artist and turned it into a really fun playable setting.
Or for Tales from the Loop.
Yeah, from Tales from the Loop. I think we're probably in for the same thing. And it's different because I guess they don't know 100% the success. So this is going to Kickstarter, whereas their Alien RPG, they just released you know, as a straightforward pre-order. So they're back on Kickstarter with an original property. Yeah.
Mm. All right. Speaking of Alien. Yeah, you got the PDF.
Oh, right.
For the core book.
That's right. They arrived. Got notification of the shipping. I'm not sure how long it's going to take for the actual physical set. So I got
you got the big one.
Yeah. Not crazy, but the one, I didn't get the limited cover.
Because it's not that good.
Yeah. The artwork is so good on the original one. And then I got the screen and dice and cards and maps. So there's a lot of things that will enhance. And I think instead of like how I was trying to use miniatures for the cinematic, they'd have tokens that are just kind of silhouettes of the type of character. And they also have something that would have helped me a lot. They basically have blips. Like,
Hulk.
Yes, exactly. So when your motion detector detects something, you put it there. There's something there there is something there. It's something, yep. There's movement. And that would have helped me a lot to just kind of track things in a more generic, unknown way instead of life forms.
Oh, well, it's the same kind of thing. Yeah,
so it's nice. And they also have detecting of ships. So there'll be a little more maybe interacting with ships. So you know there's a ship out there. There's a thing that moved in this corridor. That'll change how things operate. And everything looks really nice from the PDF because they had the sheets of the counters and everything printable. But I'll get the actual physical versions of that. But so I can't wait to try that. Just glancing. Well, one of the things that I noticed right away is that kid is a character class. And right away, I remember your feelings about about trying to exclude the kid that was one of the NPCs in the cinematic starter. So I'm basically going to set up a Goonies versus the Xenomorphs campaign just for you.
I will unfortunately be busy that day. I've only just started looking at the PDF and I got just the book. Mm-hmm. I'm most interested in the campaign mode and that's what I started looking at first. Right. But yeah, you saying there's, hey, chance to play a kid in this. And I kind of went, why? I mean, okay, there are kids in the movies and I guess that's why they did it. But given that this is horror, I'm kind of uncomfortable with that.
Mm.
And I don't know. That's not to say they shouldn't have included it. If I was going to run that game, I'd just be like, kid class is not a playable option. Nope. You can play an adult because an adult can at least kind of like agree to this, you know, to partake in the situations that they're going to be put in, where a kid kind of largely can't.
Right. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what the differences are, what the skills are, like how they're going to make the kids interesting and playable without making them in constant jeopardy or just, you know, skittering through the ventilation.
I would, you know what? I would be interested to look. I wonder if they adapted like the kids can't die rule. That would be one of the ways to make it okay to play, in my opinion, where you're just like, okay, you're a kid, you're going to be in over your head for all this stuff, but you're guaranteed to not die and nothing horrible is going to happen to you, which I don't know if that would be fun for a horror game. But.
Right. Yeah, because the, you know, like putting Newt in jeopardy was a big part of Aliens, like losing her at the end and then having to get her back. It's also going to be hard to set up, you think of this character as your daughter. You know, that's hard to set up in an RPG, so it's not going to quite have that same impact. So they did include the Hadley's Hope.
Yes, they did. Yep.
So that's definitely going to have kids because it's colonists, so it's going to be families. So yeah, we'll have to see. And you made another observation, just a cursory glance at these rules, that there's a lot of economics, a lot of bookkeeping, you know, a lot of expenses and things.
I suspected that's what campaign mode might be because there was a lot, as you pointed out, there was a lot of costs of things in the preview we got. So that made me kind of think, oh, campaign mode is going to be what's called like debt runner, where congratulations, you have a ship, you're constantly in debt and you have to take these jobs to pay stuff off. And while that can be fun, I'm not sure that's what I want out of an Alien game.
Yeah.
And I agree. It's going to be a tough balance between a cinematic style game where you know there's going to be an alien and bad stuff is going to happen. And how fun would that be to play for long periods of time? Not very.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, playing a campaign mode where you're just running jobs and there aren't xenomorphs for stretches of time, how fun is that going to be to play? And why are you playing the alien RPG then?
Right.
This is just initial impression, so I may change after I actually read the PDF and go, oh, they actually did a brilliant job. And I'm not saying they did a bad job. I'm just saying initial glance seems to be kind of possibly not to my taste.
We were kind of speculating, like when we were doing the review of the cinematic starter, we're kind of speculating what the more expanded rules will be. And I think one thing that Lyle liked about what campaign play might be is less antagonistic, you know, more cooperative.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, that will be a good aspect of it. But if you are constantly, like you've got the corporation hanging over your head, oh, that dinner just cost $30, so you're going to have to make, you know, you have to pay the store.
which I think is what might happen. Yeah.
So I guess the thinking when you look at, like, especially the first Alien movie, they're all just complaining about their shares. They're complaining about their pay. And you would think that, maybe the colonists would be in that similar situation, just like settlers or people that, you know, brought over to the Americas are like, you work for us and you buy everything from our store and you're never going to get out from under this bill. Maybe that, you know, that's the thought to create tension, because then when you have reps of the corporation and there'll be some tension between them and the colonists, and then they'll need the Marines and it's going to cost you. We'll send in the Marines, but you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like the game also ended up not being to my taste, but that Red Markets game, kind of the zombie apocalypse RPG, where the focus was mainly on economics. Mm-hmm. And pretty much every item in the game had a charge use. And so the horror came from watching the uses of like food, ammunition, medicine, all that stuff tick down, mm-hmm. and the player having to make the tough choices of when to use these charges to boost their die roll, knowing that they have finite resources.
Right.
So I see that being a possible source of tension in an alien game mm-hmm. for campaign mode. But again, how exciting is that? And why are you playing the alien RPG when you could be doing anything else? I mean, do you want, if you want that plus aliens,
right,
this is probably going to be a decent game. But again, I'll have to look at it further to see if that's the case. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if it is going to be the case.
Just from how people were using those initial rules in the cinematic starter, it seems like you can get a lot of variation. Some people went dungeon crawling, mm-hmm. pretty serious horror. And we went a little bit lighter and just kind of tension, just kind of personal tension between the crew members. So there may be some room to move around in there. So I'm curious, and I'll keep an eye on the forums and Reddit and things that where people are talking about the game and see kind of where people made those choices and what they did. Because a lot of people rejected anything that wasn't original canon starter. They're like, no, not neomorphs. I'm only going to do xenomorphs. I'm only, they didn't want anything that was kind of the further adventure.
I did notice mm-hmm. in the kind of bestiary section, there's non-xenomorph entries.
Oh.
There's just kind of like indigenous life forms.
Right.
So I don't know what alien source they pulled that from, whether it was like comic books or expanded universe, essentially. Mm-hmm. But I went, some kind of weird scorpion thing that's not xenomorph. Oh, okay.
Right.
Again, I think it kind of leaned a bit more towards like horror, as these are going to be kind of maybe mindless antagonists or stuff you have to deal with mm-hmm. In a horror game, which makes sense.
And I think for colonies too, that is going to be like you're just dealing with some pests, invading kind of vermin that you have to keep out of your camp. Once we kind of get a read through the rules, we can do kind of a first impressions. That might be interesting to kind of, because we both run it.
Yep.
And you've played in and run, so I think it'll be an interesting perspective to talk about.
What I'm hearing from is you want me to run Hadley's Hope for you, so you could also have played it.
Yeah, so the only person that hasn't played the game.
Oh, you've got a couple of the people that haven't played it as well.
Yeah, that'll be coming up. And another thing, speaking of future topics, another thing that's coming up is Lyle and I are doing some research now to do an unearthing of Powers and Perils.
Okay.
That's got an interesting history, and it's kind of, I don't want to spoil too much of our, kind of what we're coming up with, but it's the history of it, the interesting timing, and the maybe not success of that game system really says a lot about what was going on in that market at the time, and basically the beginnings of the unbeatable giant, of the world's greatest role-playing game.
Oh, I'm out of here.
I think it's a really interesting piece of history and how a company other than TSR, their take on doing a boxed fantasy game and how that was succeeded or not.
I guess in this case, or not, yeah.
Right, we already know, but in case you don't know, I'm not spoiling anything.
So it's not the destination that matters, it's the journey.
We'll kind of do a history breakdown and kind of origin of this thinking and kind of the setting, the context of what the market was like and the history of the company, and then physically unbox or unearth the physical components. You can see like in the 80s what it actually looked like if you opened this box.
You keep saying unearth. I'm going to be very disappointed if I do not actually see you on video with a shovel digging this out of the ground.
Right. Well, there will be clouds of dust and disintegrating paper as we go through things. Yeah, we just wanted to differentiate. So unearthing is kind of the vocabulary because unboxing is just so common. People really have no reason. It's not the excitement. We're not taking plastic off of a box. So it's not the excitement of, what's in this new thing?
Yeah.
It's something that maybe a lot of people already know about. So let's just put this in context and kind of, it's a time capsule. And let's open this up and say, wow, the 90s really had terrible illustrators. You know, like the kind of...
Ouch. All right.
No, but it'll be those feelings of what people put emphasis on, what companies thought was important for a game and what wasn't, and the presentation and kind of overall object, the physical object of the game. And I think that's really fun, especially as we're now in an era where a lot of people are just playing with PDFs.
Digital only?
Yeah. We'll be sticking to that analog experience for a while.
Speaking of physical objects, I got my copies of 1,000,000 Island zines the other day. Just last night, I haven't even had a chance to like look through them. Yeah, there's something nice about having actual physical books, and that's why I got them as opposed to PDFs. Right. They're cool, and I'm excited to do something with them. Don't know what that would be yet, because they're all system agnostic, Southeast Asian inspired, I guess, locations, mythology, and illustrations.
Yeah, so basically like the inspiration Free League is taking from other illustrators, you can use this as your stepping off point and kind of choose a system that,
And I think the one of the authors, Zedek Siu, in the front, they kind of specifically say the goal of this kind of collection of zines is to try and help shift D&D and fantasy RPGs in general, if not entirely away from the Eurocentric stuff, just like, hey, other cultures exist, and this is what one based on Southeast Asia might look like.
Mm-hmm. Definitely interesting. And
I just saw recently a 5e compatible setting inspired by Filipino mythology.
Mm-hmm. Kind of pre-colonial.
Pre-colonial Philippines, right. Which also looks interesting. And if it wasn't for D&D, I would probably be way more interested, but I can't blame them for making it for D&D because you kind of got to go with the biggest thing that's out there.
Right. Well, I think that'll be the most positive effect, because then you're kind of comparing one to one. You're using the same system, and it's like, this is the bestiary, these are the character classes, this is how this works. And so you see the variety. It's not all knights and magic users. Yeah. And, it's going to have a unique flavor that then you'll actually be able to compare and say, oh, well, there's the variety.
I hadn't thought of that, but that's a good point. I mean, the less differences mechanically, or fewer mechanical differences, would help highlight the cultural and setting differences.
Right. And instead of, this is an alternative thing. Well, I play 5e.
Yeah. How many times have I heard that? Straight into dangerous territory here.
Yeah, I've got a bumper sticker on my truck that says that. You haven't seen that?
It's a pickup truck, isn't it, too?
Upcoming tonight, so if you're not a patron of Idle Red Hands, then you probably won't be able to see this, but we did unbox Blood of the Phoenix, but it was a drunken cast that is exclusively behind a paywall.
Okay.
Because of the content of our unboxing.
Lots of swears.
but we're going to be doing an assembly night, so this is going to be the Eldari assembly. So we really want to play this campaign because it's got some interesting, between the two forces that were in Blood of the Phoenix, it's kind of all melee, all shooty. So I think it'll be a really fun. So, Eldari are very fast. But it's going to be kind of ranged against melee, and that'll be a fun, they're small forces. It's only going to, I think it's not even 500 points.
Oh, really? Okay.
So it'll be tiny, but it'll be fun to see those opposed against each other and play through the campaign, because it's just three steps of a campaign, and whoever wins gets an advantage in the next battle. So that'll be a fun thing to do. And we haven't done that with any of the boxes yet. So
I really do like that kind of style of campaign that Games Workshop games put out. It's kind of like a branching flowchart tree where you just kind of pick a battle type and then you kind of play a normal game, but there's some kind of either like advantage or the winner gets to choose what next mission you play. And I really like that. And it's kind of a simple way to tack a campaign structure onto an existing war game. Mm-hmm. And RPGs are story games, but I don't see why you couldn't do something like that in an RPG anyway.
Oh yeah. No, yeah, that's very true. Also, so that's the thing that I think they really did well in their kind of, Mordheim or Necromunda, the smaller kind of where your gang
gets 40mm scale Inquisitor, which I'm never going to let go.
Yeah. Where you got an advantage and you got resources based on your success. Did you see that? There is a new box, Dark Uprising?
I did not.
So there's a new Necromunda box.
And it's ridiculously expensive.
Yes. So you have heard about it.
I could just bet. It's Games Workshop. It's a new box. It's ridiculously expensive.
Right. So it's going to be like close to $400, in Japan. Yeah, so the British price is £175. So I think
it's kind of like double that for US. Right, and then times it again by 10% for the Japanese one? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be pretty brutal. It's got, Forge World had the corridors, basically.
Okay,
if you wanted to do 3D Space Hulk, they had the corridors, and that was a style of play that you could use even for 40K. You can kind of block create firing lines and block line of sight and things. And that was only in resin before they discontinued that. And so now they're producing it in plastic, and the first place that it's appearing is in this box.
Okay, cool.
That's not Zone Imperius, it's like Zone Mortalis or something. Oh, yeah, okay. Something deadly sounding. But people loved that old style, and it's nice to see that even though they discontinued it in resin, it exists in plastic, although it's quite dear. If you want to get a hold of that, it's going to be pretty expensive. Everything in this box is new sculpts.
So nice.
Yeah, two new gangs, and then this new... So it's the Enforcers.
Okay.
And a kind of blood cult looking. Yeah. So I think, I don't know if they were in the original Necromunda. It might be a new Korn-inspired guys with saws and...
Hooks. Unless Gang Escher is in there, I'm not interested.
Right. They're doing that, and it'll be interesting to see, because it's good that they're supporting Necromunda, but this isn't a starting point. This would be a continuing point.
Well, you say that, and this could be a longer topic. Is Necromunda even a starting point? Or like, since it's kind of not their main game, is it only people who knew about original Necromunda going, I remember this,
yes,
and is it that nostalgia thing for people who are willing to spend that $400?
Right. Yeah, yeah, because Kill Team would definitely be their entry into
40K. Yeah, possibly, yeah, yeah.
Because, yeah, Necromunda, the rule system and everything is different, yeah, so it's not the same. I don't know who this is for, and I guess the idea, what they're getting a little stuck on is, we're going to put something unique and original that's only available in this box. We'll put some other stuff in there and put a hefty price tag on it and see how many people buy it. And it's worked for a while.
Yeah.
Some of the box sets that they've been doing, it's been working. But now they're really pushing their luck with the game.
Can you blame them? People keep buying it, and it obviously keeps working. So why not keep doing it?
And it's near the holidays, you know, so they're like, maybe. It doesn't fit in a stocking, but...
What for Games Workshop fits in the stocking now anyway? Here's your single miniature.
And it's $40 because it's a character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Especially in like Blood of the Phoenix, that's everything that was in the fine cast has been recast into plastic. Yeah. So hopefully the days of that are over. So if you want your resin, you're going to have to go to Forge World.
Didn't really get a chance to do anything all that gaming related over the weekend or the past week because I was solo parroting. I saw that there is a business card game jam on Itch. Basically, you have to design a game that fits in a business card, front and back, or just front if you want. Extra points if you use it as your actual business card. So I think I'm going to enter that. No real idea for a game yet. I think as of recording, there's still 7 days left, so you still got like a week to enter. And I'm pretty sure that the results are not going to be judged. It's just these Itch game jams are just a chance to make something quick. For the, I guess, enjoyment of making something.
Right.
Lots of them do then move on to for sale products or get, you know, kind of polished up, but just kind of like a fun thing to join and actually make a game.
Nice, yeah. So like a jam, just like a mental exercise, just kind of riffing on the idea of how small. So I'm looking forward to the single grain of rice game.
I'm sure there is one. You could start one. Yeah. I've also been writing micro fiction. That's not based on that horrible dinosaur book because, as everyone knows, November is novel writing month. So I am instead participating in No Novel November, which is the hashtag is No November. And the goal is to write microfiction. And I've decided to write tweet-sized microfiction because I've had like 3 years of practice from running the Conan the Salaryman account.
Right.
It's actually kind of harder. So, I mean, there is Inktober, there is a list of prompts that someone has put up. And if you go to my Twitter, which I'm always on, you can see that list of prompts. And it's just one word per day, and you just write something that I believe is less than 200 or less than 500 words is kind of their definition of microfiction.
Right.
And I've just compressed that to an extreme of, okay, it's got to be less than 240 characters.
Right. So ultra nanofiction?
Yeah, nanofiction is how I super microfiction or nanofiction. Take your pick.
Nice. And I noticed that you resurrected a few familiar characters from a Monster Hearts campaign. Yes.
So that's why I said it's kind of TTRPG related. There are characters that we played in that Monster Hearts game.
Nice.
Because for the longest time after playing them, I've said, you know, I want to write fiction about them.
Right.
Here's the opportunity for me to do so.
Excellent. And because one of them was a ghoul, I guess she'll never die. So
ended up being both of them will never die.
Oh,
so,
right. That's right.
So all kinds of horrible stuff can and will happen. So yeah, I put a content warning on the top of that microfiction.
So if people want to read your microfiction or follow you, where can they do that?
If you want to follow me, I'm at Hivemind, HYVEMYND on Twitter. And the microfiction only account is Love You Till It Hurts. It's easier to spell if it's actually written out. It's like LOVEUTILITHURTS because there wasn't enough space to actually spell everything out for the actual handle. It's a lot easier to follow me and then just
find it.
Find it from there.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll put links to both of those accounts though, so people can catch up with you.
And how about you?
And I almost missed it this week. I actually did it from my tablet this week because
nice.
I was home with a sick child and I had technical difficulties trying to stream. I did it from a tablet, which was a little bit bizarre and probably sounded a little odd. And I didn't turn a webcam on because I was looking down at the tablet. It would have been
horrifying. You didn't want to have the people look up at you. Yeah.
It would be horrifying to see that in a webcam. But I do a weekly live stream for my cartoon. You can find the cartoon at abusecartoons.com, both on Twitch and YouTube at abusecartoons. And the archive is gocomics.com/domesticabuse. If you want to find this podcast, visit Idle Red Hands and follow us on Idle Red Hands on Twitter. And if you really love what we're doing, please help us out and become a patron. So patreon.com/idleredhands.
It's the only way to find that unboxing.
Yes, the only way to hear all of our drunken uncut recordings.
Which I'm not sure is a bonus or not.
All right. So that's it for this week. So we'll be back next week. Goodbye.
Later, mortals.
On and on, some Sonic.